Chapter 11, Mastering the Dead. Brienne could have wept with horror. More of the dead kept surfacing as they went, coming out of the alleyways and passages, and they all went flowing into the vast, terrible mob marching steadily ahead of them, never so much as twitching aside, obedient. Rob had to do it. There was nothing else that could be done. There were just too many of them. But she could tell that this was the beginning of the end, the start of the road that would lead him to a dreadful tomb in the far north, a sleep of 1,000 years of forgetting and rage. She'd been at Rob's side during the final battle at the wall, when they'd carved their way through the endless, immense ranks gathered all around them, and reached the Night's King. She'd seen him close, and she'd met his blade on hers, and his face had been empty. A hollowed-out cup filled not even with hate, but loathing for all the living. He'd despised them so much that he'd wanted to wipe the earth clean of them. He hadn't cared about his own existence at all, even as Rob's blade had slid all the way through his body and his limbs failed. She could tell he hadn't felt any fear. He'd only looked at Rob with a kind of dull, contemptuous recognition of someone stupid who'd let himself be drawn into service to a vile, grotesque cause. The contempt you'd feel for someone making the same foolish mistake you'd made yourself once upon a time. And this was the mistake, the dreadful and necessary mistake that Rob had to make. To put his will on the dead, he had to go walking down the winter road to meet them, one deliberate step at a time into death, to save the world of the living for everyone but himself. She could see the horror of it written on him, the wide blankness of his eyes, as if he already rode halfway in another world instead of this one. A cold world without hope or love or kindness, without any mercy, but the most brutal one, of having it at long last come to a dismal end. She couldn't think of any way to save him. She'd been trying. She and John had spoken with Tyrion and with Sam, with Maester Aemon, as soon as they'd come back to Castle Black after the coronation. She'd written down for them every word the Children of the Forest had said, and they'd been looking through every book and story they could dig up. Even Melisandre had tried to help them, but the only answer she could give them wasn't any answer at all. She said that when the Long Night ended, they had to take Rob and burn him, give him to her Lord of Light, and that would break the curse at last. "And you could do that," Brienne had said flatly. "You could take him, the man who's given himself to us all, redeemed the world with his life, and burn him alive. Stand there and watch him scream and suffer."
"For the sake of my own life?" Melisandre said and shook her head. "No, to save him. To break the cycle of torment? Yes."
"Well, I couldn't. And I couldn't stand by and watch it done, either," Brienne said.
"No," John had said, his eyes dark and angry on Melisandre. "And I'll kill anyone who tries."
"Before swords get drawn," Tyrion had put in then, "I'd like to point out to Lady Melisandre that if the solution was that simple, just kill the king in the north at the end of the long winter, someone would have done it before now. And I'd like to point out to both of you that if it would work, Rob would order us to do it himself. No one who would become the king in the north could possibly want to become the Night's King after." That had silenced the quarrel, and Tyrion had added, "The Children of the Forest said that the king in the north has to come back and yield his crown, and he chooses to go to the far north instead. You can't fix that just by killing him. In fact, I doubt you'd be able to. If the only one who can kill the Night's King is the king in the north..." He shrugged. It had made too much hard and bitter sense,
and more still after Rob had struck the Knight's King down. When they'd looked at one another over their crossed blades, their faces strangely mirrored beneath their crowns, Brienne had felt it again, that terrible resonance thrumming through the world. Rob had killed him more by virtue than by skill with a blade, she'd thought. He'd rung true once more, holding fast in a way past mortal, and she didn't think an ordinary man, uncrowned, could have stood against the Night's King. And the most dreadful thing about it was that Tyrion had been right, because after the battle at the Wall, they'd stood by the funeral pyres, watching a million dead men burn. Rob had said, without looking her in the face, "Forgive me, but I must ask you." It was in a low voice, and she'd felt her heart clench even before he'd gone on, saying, "When it's over, when the long night ends at last." And he'd made her give her word to try to save him from becoming the monster he'd given up his life to slay. She hadn't told him what Tyrion had said. It seemed worse to refuse Rob the little hope he was asking for. Instead, she'd given him her word, and then she'd gone and wept silently in her own room where no one could see her. And when she next saw Jon, he'd looked at her stricken out of red-rimmed eyes, and she knew he'd done the same. "The question you have to answer is why," Tyrion had said to her and Jon at the last, before they'd parted at Winterfell, and the two of them had followed Robb away into the long night. "Why did the Starks break the last oath?" "Do you find that hard to understand?" Brienne had said. "Would you keep that oath? To come and be put to death after you've saved the world for everyone else?" Tyrion had shaken his head, frowning. "That's the wrong question," he said. "You're thinking about it from your perspective. You're ready and eager to forgive Rob for breaking an intolerable oath, and of course you would. Of course any of us would. I'm not accusing him. I'm asking why he would choose to break the last oath and only the last oath. It isn't the one I'd balk at myself. I would rather die than go freeze in the north for 1,000 years until the next long night comes. No matter how resentful I was, I can't imagine that I'd cut off my nose to spite my face quite that badly. So why do the Starks? And if you can answer that question, maybe then you'll find a way to save him." But now Brienne saw the faint blue chill of death settling into Rob's face, and she could only think of one answer. What difference would 1,000 years of sleep make at the end, when he was already so far gone, already fallen into night? How would he be able to care at all for anything but the last few dregs of life he had left to cling to, after the need of the world had taken all the rest? And she would forgive him. She only half wished that she could forgive him now. She wished that he had balked here and let the dead come sweeping over them all together in a drowning wave so she didn't have to watch him going the rest of the way down. And Tyrion had been wrong. She didn't see any way to save him at all. There were tears on Jon's face, too, when she looked at him. He looked despair back at her, and she knew he hadn't any more idea what to do than she did. All they could do was go on marching behind their king, down the winter road. The air felt unpleasant against his skin, cloying, too warm and sticky with foulness carried on it. A thick stink of sweat and shit and warm filth. Rob knew what he was doing, but there was a strange, distant feeling to it. He couldn't quite remember why, until Grey Wind whined up at him a little from the ground, and he looked around himself and saw them, his riders, the shining faithful at his side, his brother and his father and Brienne with the light so bright in her, following him down the road as far as anyone could. the others close around him. They were there, the only reason he needed, but he kept forgetting to look at them. The great keep was rising on the cliff ahead, dark against the brilliant sky full of stars. A good target. He was going there. He had to. He had an oath to keep. He had to stay true. That was easier to remember. Clean and sharp-edged. The dead inside the keep joined the gates. The courtyard inside was littered with gold-cloaked guards who rose up to join the ranks as his steed walked steadily past them. There were more dead men and women through the corridors of the keep. They all rose as well and came after them. The smell of blood was bright and clear, washing away the rest of the stink. The keep was large, the hooves echoing against marble floors. Borob knew where he had to go. He felt the oath like a length of silver drawn out of him, a strand pulled taut and drawing him onward if he wanted to keep himself whole and true. He paused only when he reached the doors of the throne room, an irritation stirring even as the dead clawing at them fell back and melted into his army. One of the doors had been torn open, and in the gap a dozen knights had been fighting to keep them from the room beyond, with swords and slivers of dragonglass. That alone was nothing to trouble him, but a man was standing before them, one of his men, or almost. It was the Kingslayer. He'd got ahead of them. Rob looked at him, cold and measured. Did Lannister mean to defy him again? But the Kingslayer didn't. Instead, he knelt and put his sword down before him and bowed his head and said, "Please, Your Grace, have mercy, at least on the children, I beg you." "As you had mercy on my son," Father said, low and savage, and raised his own spear to strike him down. And then a high voice called, "Father, Rob!" And Rob lifted his head to see a boy he recognized, his brother Bran, standing in the throne room beyond, pale and thin but whole. "Let him go," the Kingslayer said sharply, standing up and waving back to the guards in the throne room, when one of them would have laid hands on Bran. "It's all right, you can come," he said to Bran, who darted a look at him and then ran through the hall and out the doors to them. And Father lowered his spear so he could lean down and catch him and lift him up into his arms. Rob looked at his little brother, another silver brightness in the world, small and shining and true, and anger stirred deep in him. "Did they hurt you?" "The Boltons killed Hodor," Bran said. "They chained me." "He's been avenged," Rob said. "And him?" He nodded towards Lannister. "He took the chains off, but he wouldn't let me go back," Bran said. I told him there had to be a Stark in Winterfell. He took me off the mountain when I almost got away." "When you almost plummeted to your death," Lannister said in protest. Rob swung a cold look on him and he paled, but he didn't sink. He wasn't lying. But his throat moved in a swallow, and he bowed his head again anyway. "The mistake was mine. I failed you. I should have let him go. I should have let them both go. Let me bear the punishment for it, please." And it was all true, and yet he'd also given true service, a rasping irritation against Rob's mind. And he said, cold and distant, "Make way." And Jaime stood up and pushed both of the doors open to the hall. He backed away to the throne room, keeping himself before it, a pathetic gesture, small courage and too late. The false king was there, his face pale and staring, and the golden queen at his side standing before her children. The other knights had fallen back to guard them. Rob looked down at them, anger and contempt stirring together. And then he looked away, to the cringing prince with his sullen face and golden hair, and the lady at his side. "Lady Marjorie of House Tyrell," he said to her, cold and clear. "An oath was made to you in return for ships filled with grain, a promise kept, which I am here to answer. I am..." And he had to pause for a moment, groping before he could say his name. "Robb Stark, the king in the north, do you claim my hand as is your right?" She was very pale. Her eyes went from him to his army behind him. And after a moment more of hesitation, she stepped forward and made him a deep curtsy, her hands gripping tight to her skirts as she swept them wide and bowed her head. "Your Grace," she said, a little tremble in her voice, "I have been married to another since your father made us that promise, but House Tyrell would not break faith with you. If it would offend you..." "No," he said, remote. He felt only a hint of distaste in him at the idea at all. She was beautiful, but she was only a chain to hold him bound to mortal dross. "The promise was clear. The choice is yours. If you do not claim my hand, still your house has served me, and I will guard you and yours from the dead so long as the long night lasts." She swallowed as she straightened up, her shoulders sinking a little with relief, a taut fearfulness going out of her body. "You're very kind, Your Grace," she said. "Although in honor I can't betray my vows, I thank you for keeping your father's promise and for your protection. House Tyrell is honored to have served you." He was glad to have it done. The feeling of the silver length released to ease back into him, an uncomfortable tether gone. He said nothing more to the girl, who was already fading from his mind. Instead, he turned to the king, big and hollow and sagging. "Robert Baratheon, you summoned me to your court. I have come. Hear me. You called me a liar and a traitor on no grounds at all, because you didn't want to believe the true warnings I sent you. You demanded that I abandon my duty to make you vain obeisance. You imprisoned my father, your loyal servant, and sent spies and traitors against me and my kin. If men of honor hadn't risen from every corner of Westeros defying your will, our cause would have been lost. For the sake of House Tyrell, who fed my men, and your brother Stannis, whose skill and valor held the wall, and for all the men of the South who answered the call, I will shelter your realm through the long night. But never again will House Stark give fealty to you or any of your heirs. I name you false king and false friend, oathbreaker and coward, and may you end your days in the shame and misery your treachery deserves." It was a savage curse, full of wrath, and Rob's eyes blazed blue with violence as he spoke. Robert sank to his knees and went crumpling to the floor onto his face. Cersei lunged to catch him, looking up with a flaring of her own rage and defiance. But even she flinched back from Rob's gaze, the terrible blow of it, and bowed her head away. Jaime wanted fiercely to go to her, to Tommen and Myrcella, huddled, clinging, and afraid behind her. But he couldn't. Robb had turned away from the throne, and as he went, he looked down at Jaime and said icily, "Come," and rode back out of the hall, the ranks of the dead parting to let him and his riders through. Jaime looked back at Cersei once, and then followed him, his skin crawling as he walked on the heels of the riders between the blank-faced dead. Some of them hideously familiar. The gold cloaks he'd been fighting beside only a little while ago. The dead fell in behind him, right at his back. None of his living men were with him anymore. Not a single one of the gold cloaks or Kingsguard tried to come along. A deep, terrible chill still flowed off the dead. And he felt so cold he might almost have been in the grave himself. Just another one of the corpses obediently following their king into the long night ahead. Robb led the dead out of the city, more of them gathering as he went, an endless army of them marching through the streets, empty of life. All the doors and windows were shut, except where they were gaping wide on empty stores and houses. Frost was crawling over the cobbles and up the walls. The city fountains had frozen to solid stillness. Only the faint, delicate hoofbeats of the riders' steeds broke the silence, repeating rhythms. Jamie kept on going, even as he began stumbling with exhaustion and numbness, struggling with each step to keep himself from going flat and being trampled by the unhesitating ranks behind him. The riders were parting to either side. Jamie only barely noticed it, just staggering onward. And he would have kept going himself if Brienne hadn't put out the butt of her spear and drawn him out of the flow of the dead. He stopped on trembling legs by the side of her mount as the dead went silently onward, past the king, and marched straight into the sea. They didn't even pause. They walked down the sloping hill onto the sandy shore, into the slow, lapping salt waves of Blackwater Bay, and kept going as the waters rose up their bodies until their heads disappeared beneath the dark waters, vanishing with only a few ripples showing where they were still going, until they were further out yet and completely gone. Rob sat his steed at the edge of the hill, watching them go past him, his face starlight pale and his eyes blank, as if even rage had gone out of him. He didn't move. The dead marched onward by the thousands and disappeared into the water. Finally, the last of them drained out of the city and went into the sea, and it was over. The night was crisp and cold, the stars overhead like small punctures in a black sunshade, unbelievably bright. A sliver of moon hung over the water. Rob still didn't move. And then Brienne said softly, "Your Grace." He turned his head towards her, and after a moment said, "Find a place to make camp. We cross the river tomorrow." Jamie was still clinging to Brienne's saddle. The countryside was strange in the dark around him. When she looked down and asked him, "Is there a campground near here?" Jamie almost couldn't answer her. He had no idea at first where they were. He slowly worked it out. They'd come out the King's Gate again and were north of the city. "Yes," he said. "There's a campground on the road to Rosby, just west of the hill." She nodded and took her foot out of the stirrup and held a hand down to him. He stared up at her, and then slowly he reached up and took her hand and got himself mounted up behind her saddle, clinging on. The ice stag's body was strangely cool beneath his legs. She led the way up the hill and over, and the road was there, the sandy gravel visible even in the dark, catching a little more of the light. Jamie pointed her to the large campground. He never passed it without at least 2 dozen parties of travelers stopped to rest. There was a small cookshop and a ring where jonglers or mummers usually performed. But it was utterly deserted tonight, and the bonfire wood had been stacked ready for burning, but left untouched. He slid down and kept going, sinking to his knees on the ground. Everything still hurt from Eddard's terrible blows, and fighting through the pain had made it worse. He'd been cut 6 times, and there was a sharp sawing pain in his left side when he breathed. He was so cold. There was a kind of deep quiet settling into him, something he knew he had to fight off and couldn't make himself. Brienne was standing, looking down at him, and her face was set and still hard, but she gave orders, and someone started the fire, and she took him by the arm and helped him stand and took him over to a bedroll that someone had laid down beside it. She eased him down flat and put a cloak over him. He woke hours later, the heavy stillness of the camp with the fire down to the embers. There was some meat still left on a spitted deer, and he carved slivers with his dagger and ate them with his fingers, and packed snow into a water bag and put it by the coals until it melted enough to drink. The riders were asleep around him, most of them only wrapped in a cloak, sleeping against their steeds. But one pavilion had been put up at the back of the camp, a pavilion for the king. Jamie put his hand on his side and tested his ribs again. The sharp pain came back almost at once. He breathed through it. And then he got up anyway. It didn't matter. He could tell it wouldn't be much longer. He couldn't survive with the riders for long. Even if Brienne did keep taking pity on him, he'd be worn away by the cold and the work, trying to go beyond the limits of his two mortal flesh. And one day he'd go down in the snow and he wouldn't get up, and they'd ride on without him. And he'd have to hope that her mercy extended to one last stab of a dragonglass spear in his back. So there wasn't really any reason not to see if he could please his king a few more times before the end, no matter how much it hurt. He went to the pavilion and glanced inside, ready to go back to the fire if Rob was asleep. But Rob was sitting up in a camp chair draped with furs and only gazing straight ahead at the smoldering brazier. He didn't move. Jamie ducked inside and let the flap fall shut again behind him. "Perhaps I could be of service," he said, "if you can't sleep." Rob turned his head and stared at him as blankly as if he couldn't even be bothered to answer. But he didn't say no. So Jamie slowly went to him, and even more slowly knelt down before him. And when Rob just kept looking down at him with a kind of distant and mild curiosity, nothing that particularly interested him, Jamie reached for the skirts of his armor again. He unbuckled it completely this time, carefully, and got it and the leather out of the way, so he could really get at Rob's cock. He put his head into Rob's lap, and Rob drew a mildly surprised breath when Jamie licked at him. But he still didn't move. He barely stirred under Jamie's tongue, as if it wasn't worth his attention. Jamie could have snarled in frustration. He settled in and took his time instead. He licked and breathed out over Rob's cock, mouthed up and down the whole length of it, took it into his mouth and sucked on it just a little, then drew off and teased some more, over and over. Rob did slowly get hard and swell in his hands and mouth, and his breath began to come just a little quicker. But Jamie was doing everything he could think of, and he still couldn't get Rob to catch. Like a completely dead fire, he was trying to spark up again. It was driving him desperate. And then, in a burst of recklessness, he licked his finger and slid his hand between Rob's legs and tried to put it in him. He expected to be thrown across the pavilion and smashed to pieces for his temerity. And instead, Rob only made a small sound, curious, and Jamie slid it deeper in him and started to fuck him with it while he kept mouthing wildly at Rob's cock with fresh energy, panting with lust himself, imagining Rob spread out beneath him, his cock going in while he watched pleasure travel over Rob's face. And he half mumbled, "Please, please," over Rob's cock and sucked it again. And Rob groaned a little and then moved at last under him, a sort of restless, uneasy shivering. And then he caught Jamie's head with his hand and fucked his mouth once and came, just like that, a burst of heat spilling. Jamie swallowed, but he kept on sucking at him, licking. It wasn't enough. It wasn't nearly enough. He wanted more. And when Rob gasped a little, Jamie pulled off and panted out, "Will you come to bed?" Rob got up and went with him over to the sprawling cot, and Jamie coaxed him down against the pillows and stretched himself out alongside and went back to sucking him luxuriously. The angle was better. He could get so much more of him in. and Rob groaned at last beneath him, and then was suddenly gripping Jamie's head with both hands and fucking into him urgently, stuttering jerks one after another, brutal, perfect, and then he came so hard the second time that Jamie nearly choked. Afterwards, Jamie crawled up the bed and snuggled in against Rob, filled with the glowing, intoxicating warmth. And at least half of it was intense, smug satisfaction. Rob's eyes were closing, but his hand rested on Jamie's back between the shoulder blades. And the direwolf jumped up with them and curled up at his back. And Jamie pulled the covers over them all and fell into a lusciously deep sleep. In the morning, Rob looked at him with irritation, which was much better than that cold blankness. At least he couldn't help letting some feeling show. Jamie lowered his eyes in a parody of a demure air and said, "Would you like to have me before you get up, Your Grace?" And it was all the more delightful that he could tell Rob meant to say no, and instead said, "Turn over." And Jamie spread himself out on his belly, and Rob fucked him so hard that Jamie kept expecting to have the tearing pain in his side come back. But instead, he didn't even feel a single pang. He felt fantastically good, in fact. And as he realized it, he sprawled himself out beneath the pounding and just took it with glorious abandon. After Rob climbed off him, Jamie rolled over onto his back and lay the wrong way across the heaped cot and just laughed a little, a breathless gasp, deliriously happy. Oh, he was going to please his magnificent mythical king every night, and he was going to fight with the Silver Riders every day. And when Rob stalked over, ready to be furious, Jamie just caught at his hand and brought it to his lips and kissed it and said, "Thank you." He was nakedly sincere, and it served him like a shield. Rob's brilliant glare didn't harden into that terrible crushing force. It slid back into ordinary annoyance instead. He plainly didn't like it. He clenched his jaw and snarled down, "Why didn't you come?" in a fresh wave of fury. And Jamie wanted to tell him everything, to tell him all the reasons. But there were too many of them, and they weren't good enough. So instead, he said, "But then you wouldn't have someone to do this. Don't tell me you don't find it an extremely important task." And Rob laughed aloud, a choked-off burst that stopped as soon as it came out of his mouth, and left him looking strangely bewildered, as if he didn't understand how he could possibly find Jamie anything other than despicable. And then he shook it off and stalked away to the brazier with his back stiff, and Jamie basked in all the delightful sensations, the warmth soaking through his limbs, the strength flooding his body, the deep breath of satiation, and best of all, the sweet savor of victory. It was even better after Brienne came in to help arm Rob. She halted just inside the tent, all her stern brooding falling away. She stared at Rob, wide-eyed and shocked, as if she was more surprised by finding them together the second time, and stammered a little when she spoke to him and jerked a bewildered look of her own over at Jamie. He climbed out of the cot and stretched himself into a tall, lazy line and smirked at her as offensively as he possibly could, before he went outside to wrestle back into his own arms. She even came over to him afterwards by the bonfire and stood over him as he was buckling on his greaves, staring down at him. "Was there something you wanted, Lady Brienne?" Jamie said coolly. "Or did His Grace want me again?" Adding a bit of emphasis to "want me." "Whatever you're doing," she said, and he was already making up the answer in his head, ready to parry her attack, when she added, "It's helping." And he paused and stared at her. "You'll sleep in his tent from now on and ride at his side." Jamie nearly said something idiotic, like, "Are you sure?" And then he said something far more idiotic. He asked, Helping with what? Because then she told him the answer. She told him the price that Robb Stark, 17 years old, had paid to become his shining king. The price he'd paid to save the lives of all the useless, cowardly, oath-breaking cunts of the world. And the 1,000 years of torment he'd still have left to pay. After he realized what a stupid thing it had been to do. Robb almost wished that it didn't help. Not for any pride or even anger. He was still angry at the Kingslayer. Furiously angry. But that didn't stop him wanting to fuck the man half senseless. The anger only made it better. Made it something he could imagine doing at all. Lannister had been right. He would never have commanded any of his true and loyal riders to do any such thing. And if any of them had known that he wanted it, that would have been as much as to command them. So he wouldn't have wanted it at all. He'd only commanded Jaime because he'd not meant it. He'd been trying to make him balk, to pry off his clinging fingernails and heave him away back into the crawling dirt with the rest of the dishonorable cowards, where he belonged, even if he had been brave enough to stand and fight the dead when they'd risen, and had put himself between them and other men. Now Robb didn't need to command anything at all. Jaime was finding every possible chance to wriggle into his bed. The one night Robb tried to tell him that he didn't need his services, without commanding him away, he still woke the next morning in warmth and relaxation and weight. The Kingslayer was sprawled almost entirely over him. "You're not a lion, you're a house cat," Robb told him, trying to be insulting, to find the cold, slicing, powerful anger again. But apparently Lannister had sucked that out of him. All that came was exasperation. "Won't turn up when called and tries to take over all the furniture."
You forgot a bit," Jaime said, drowsy and still not moving. "Purrs rewardingly when stroked."
And he nuzzled up Robb's neck and bit at his ear, and the hot pleasure came sparking along Robb's skin, so much like living that he couldn't refuse it. Even though it made it worse, 1,000 times worse, when he had to rise each time after and go back to the horror of his duty. He knew that Father and John and Brienne all now desperately hoped that the gods meant to be kind, to repay all they'd endured at the Kingslayer's hands by making him the instrument of his own salvation. They put Lannister in his bed now. They'd called a steed for him. They let him ride in their midst, and when they fought, they made an effort to guard him if a wave of the dead broke through. Robb didn't know how to tell them it wasn't any kindness at all. He couldn't resist it any more than a man being put to death by slow torment could have resisted it if he'd been offered some comfort, a chance to catch his breath, a drink of hot liquor to numb the pain. But the end he was going to was the same, and all the little interruptions only drew out the agony. It would have been easier if he'd never been lured back to the living world at all, if he'd merely continued onwards along the cold, dark winter road, since he still had to walk all its length. He'd been far enough down it, after having to master the dead at King's Landing, that he'd forgotten what he'd left behind. He'd lost so much that he wouldn't have known it if the rest went too. But now? Now he knew what he was going to lose. A little more of it was clawed away from him every time he rode into the dark, and not all of it was clawed back when he lay down with Jaime after. Robb couldn't even have any more the pathetic comfort of deceiving himself and pretending he'd be the one to break the endless curse. He'd already begun feeling the deadly emotion, not wrath or even hatred, but disgust. The feeling of a man who lights a candle in a dark room and finds the floor crawling with vile insects and slimy worms, gnawing on each other and everything around them, and only wants to stamp them out. He hadn't been saving the world for the living anymore at King's Landing. He'd only been doing it for the sake of the oath he'd made to protect the world.
Another demanding silver line he felt wrapped around them like a heavy entangling chain. And the only ones he'd cared for anymore at all had been his riders, the Oath Keepers, the ones who'd answered his call. But he knew now that if they stayed with him too long, they'd only end up in the Dark Spell as well. They would rise as White Walkers, still in his service, and join him in the horror. He tried not to think about it. Sometimes he could forget. When they were riding, swift and sure over the snow. When they were fighting, the clash of blades and dragon glass. When he had to put his will on the dead, if they came to a place with too many of them. And he went sliding a long way down the winter road, and the cold came into him again. He could forget, then, as well. But when Jamie put his hands on him and threw himself with determined abandon into the work of lifting him a little bit out of the grave, then Rob would gasp, struggling for air, and claw his way back up from the cold dirt, involuntary, and remember. And oh, he didn't want to remember anymore. After another month, they came to Old Town, a city near as big as King's Landing, with a dozen lich yards scattered all over. And once more, he had to eat one of the fruits whole and take hold of the dead and drive them into the sea. He strayed in the gray winter paths afterwards, distant and cold. Jamie spent 3 days coaxing him back, teasing and prodding. And when at last he managed to do it, Rob sat up in his bed after the fucking was over, breathing hard, with his own name on his mind again, and the dreadful road he'd just walked laid out clear ahead for him to go back down. He couldn't bear it. He wept, helplessly, and only barely stifled it in his hands. So Father wouldn't hear. In that one desperate living moment, Rob wanted nothing more than to call for him, to go into his arms and be a child again, a boy with no hurts that his father couldn't make well. And he also wanted nothing more than to cry out to him in cruel protest. You could have come. You could have forsaken Robert instead of me. Jamie was sitting up beside him, reaching for him instead. But Rob didn't want his arms. Lannister was here for pride, for pleasure. He gloried in the fight and in the fucking just the same. And if he'd been told that to answer the call would be to have an endless warring battle, he'd have run so quick he'd have reached the wall before Rob had. No, Rob said raggedly, and got out of the bed. And while he still had the strength of the agony inside him, he added, "You'll not come to my bed again. Not anymore. Not if anyone else tells you. I command you." "Your Grace," Jamie said in protest. And then, "Rob, no," Rob said savagely. "You're not saving me. You're only pulling me up from the water long enough to have a breath and then drowning me again. And you do it so you can have a place at my side that you didn't earn and don't deserve." Jamie caught his breath behind him. Rob turned and found him standing, staring at him, his face a rigid mask. "Tell Brienne I said it's done," Rob added, with a final desperate burst of strength. "Then take your steed and go. Go back north. There's still work to be done to help the guard against the dead, even where I and my riders have cleansed the first wave." Rob meant to force the command upon him, but before he could find out if he had the strength of will to do it, Lannister said, his voice low and whispering, "As you command, Your Grace," and turned away to his clothes. He dressed swiftly and took his arms, and then he came to Rob's side and caught his hand and kissed it once before he left the tent. And Rob knew, in a sickening wave of mingled relief and horror, that he'd be gone before they broke camp that day, and there'd be no more living heat to warm him, no other human hand stretched out that he could grasp to lift him up even for a single choking breath. Jamie thought telling Brienne would be the worst of it, or at least the worst part that he was going to have to endure. She'd want to tell Snow and Eddard herself, instead of making them hear it from him. He knew they'd all hated every minute of letting him put so much as a finger on Rob. They'd only tolerated it in their greater desperation. And Jamie hadn't cared, either. He let them use him in all the same urgency. Because they hadn't known, they hadn't let themselves know, what all of them were really doing to Rob. Drowning him over and over like some grotesque torture straight out of the inquisitory handbook of the faith militant, just to try and hold on to a little more of him for a little more time before he went under for good. As he told her, Brienne's face went slowly stricken, her eyes like deep hollow wells of grief. And after he'd finished, she was silent and only nodded when he told her, "He's ordered me to go north and help protect the cleared out lands from any more of the dead. I'll take 2 bags of the dragon glass." He went to his steed at once and saddled up as quickly as he could and got one of the other riders to help him into his armor. He was as desperate to go now as he'd been to stay. He had to get away before Rob came out and saw him, and had to make the choice to send him away all over again. Because if Rob couldn't, if Rob looked at him and couldn't bear to give up his pathetically inadequate, whorish comfort when it was the only comfort he could have, then Jamie would have to stay and go on doing it, knowing that he was only making it worse instead of better. He thought that was as bad as it could get. He couldn't imagine anything worse. But he was about to mount when a voice said behind him, "Sir Jamie." And he turned to find the Red Witch behind him, and she held out a small wooden box. He knew what it was, and he stood still, his heart pounding. Her eyes were bright and fixed upon him intently, and he didn't want it. He knew he didn't want it. He took it anyway and opened the lid and stared at the fruit inside. "Rob didn't tell you to give this to me," he said in a desperate attempt and held it back out. She made no move to take it. "No, but you will need it before the end, for the children of the forest have told us that the king in the north must return to them and yield up the crown he has been given, or he will become the Night's King in his turn." "I know," Jamie said harshly. She nodded. "And they have warned us that he cannot make the choice himself. The oath not even a Stark can keep. But I have seen you standing in the Weirwood Grove," she went on softly, as his stomach tightened slowly into a solid knot, "holding the blade of House Stark in your hand. And there was bright red blood upon the sword and on the ground." And he wanted to say no. He wanted to throw the box at her head and mount up and run. But she tilted her head and smiled at him a little with her own red, red mouth. "What orders have you been given?" He said, rasping, a protest in every word. "To go north and..." "Yes," she said, interrupting, and he halted. Because that was, after all, the order Rob had given him. "Go north. Go all the way north and make ready, Kingslayer." And then she turned and left him, standing with the terrible fruit in his hands, the power he had no right to share, stolen from the king he had no right to love, the king he had to kill.